The year was 1917, and Halifax, like the rest of the world, was fully embroiled in the First World War, serving as the assembly and departure point for transatlantic convoys carrying supplies and soldiers to the war effort. Overseas, a small city was quickly evolving into a world-class port and major naval base of operations. Halifax was a hub of activity. Troops bound for battle swept in and out of the city. Laborers followed to and from work as the war created a significant industrial and residential boom, and children of all ages wandered to schools for their lessons. In a time of war and devastation, Halifax was thriving. That all changed the morning of December 6, 1917. Approximately 6 minutes after 9 a.m., a dreadful miscommunication between two ships in the harbor resulted in an explosion of cataclysmic proportions. 2,000 people were killed and 9,000 more were injured. The city was reduced to ruins and debris. Considered Halifax's darkest day, the sheer magnitude of the traumatic event left a lasting impression on the city and its residents. The tragedy bred countless stories of courage and hope that in many ways shaped what Halifax has become today. Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, the stories of that event and more, the ghosts of Halifax. Hello everyone and welcome to a special edition of Real Ghost Stories Online. My name is Tony Bruschi. On today's episode, we're going to explore the hauntings that have been reported around Halifax, the stories that surround those hauntings, the possible reasons, and the human side of the tragedy that took place in Halifax, Nova Scotia, so many years ago. Believe it or not, on our honeymoon that Jenny and I took, we actually visited Halifax, and at the time, we're unaware of the horrible tragedy that had taken place with the ship containers exploding so many years ago and the just horrible, gruesome situation that unfolded there. But we did learn quite a bit about it on that trip and some of the tours that we had taken, as well as other very interesting and haunting events that had taken place in Halifax, including it being the spot that so many of the victims of Titanic were brought to from the Carpathia and other vessels that were trying to pull wreckage from the sea after that horrible tragedy. So we will cover some of those stories as well today here on Real Ghost Stories Online. The information in today's show was taken from various places around the web, along with the information and stories that were sent in to us here at Real Ghost Stories Online. To be an interesting look into the ghosts of Halifax. Of course, if you do like our show and you'd like it to continue, please consider becoming an EPP. That's an extra podcast person that supports our show. It keeps us on the air. It's only $5 a month, and you can sign up on the website at realghoststoriesonline.com. Now, on with today's show. Today's show begins with a real ghost story. It begins, "I never put much thought into ghosts until I moved to Nova Scotia. I was 6 years old, and I loved the house. It was so roomy, so welcoming. It was 2 weeks before my birthday. I was in my bedroom trying to sleep. I looked over to my wall. In the corner of my eye, I saw the shadow of a man looking at me from the corner of my wall. I looked over to the door, and it was gone. This continued for 1 year. When I was 7, I was braver and bolder and got irritated easily. I saw it again. The black figure of a man. And he appeared to be wearing a coal mine hat. Once again, I looked at the door and it disappeared. I got mad and shouted, "If you don't go away, I'm telling on you." I never saw it again. So when I was 8, we were getting ready to move to Ontario. My mom went out to Halifax to visit a friend. So it was just me, my dad, and my brother. My dad rented us a movie, and we watched it with some chips. When the movie ended, my dad tucked us in for bed. Then he watched his movie. It was another sleepless night for me. I was in my bed, petting my dog. My dad had gone to bed, and my brother was sleeping. Then I heard the footsteps. It sounded like someone dragging their feet across the floor in the kitchen. And I sat up, terrified, as my dad came into my room and yelled at me for going into the kitchen at, "Oh, dark stupid." I explained to him that it wasn't me. I was as scared as a mouse getting carried off by an owl. He went out to the kitchen, did a thorough investigation, sat down in the living room to watch the rest of his movie. Those are just two of the paranormal encounters I've had in Halifax. I remember when I was 7, crying myself to sleep and wailing, "Why me? Why can I only see them?" I'm now a teenager. I have more encounters. But last week I learned the history of my old house. Sometime in the 1900s, a coal mine bomb exploded. 26 people lost their lives. My house was built on top of that coal mine. I respect the ghosts of this house, and I wish I had been nicer. Now all I think about is a father looking at the little girl he never got to have. May they rest in peace. And no, I will never forget them. This one of many stories of the undead from Halifax. It's a town that's ripe with hauntings. And I'm sure you will discover that more as we continue on with today's specially formatted episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. Our next letter says, "This story may be a little bit lame, and it's not super scary, but it is somewhat interesting, so I thought I would share. I live in Halifax, Nova Scotia. During the First World War on December 6, 1917, two ships carrying ammunition collided in our harbor, the second largest natural harbor in the world. The resulting explosion was the largest man-made detonation in history until the nuclear bomb came along. Thousands of people were killed, and the city was all but leveled. As a result, my city is known as one of the most haunted places in North America. One of the places that is renowned for ghost sightings is a restaurant called the Five Fishermen, where I worked for about a year in my early 20s as a dish dog. The building itself was used as a morgue for the victims of the Halifax explosion and later, the Titanic. It was also for a time a funeral home. A side note, the church across the street has the figure of a man imprinted in one of the windows. The window glass had been replaced several times in the past 100 years, but the figure always returns. Many co-workers of mine have claimed to see things at one time or another. A man in early 20th century garb walking through a mirror in the dining hall. Pots and pans flying from the racks. The building has been on more than one television series. Anyway, I wish I had more of an interesting encounter, but mine is kind of dull. It was late one night, almost midnight. The manager and I were the only people left in the building. She was in the office upstairs, and in back, I was cleaning the kitchen. I just finished sweeping when I realized I'd forgotten the dustpan in the prep room about 20 feet away. I set the broom against the wall, absently, and it fell over. I didn't bother picking it up because it was coming right back. I walked into the prep room, grabbed the dustpan, and returned to the part of the kitchen where I had left the broom. Only now the broom was propped back up against the wall. Super lame for a ghost story, I know, but I didn't put that broom back up against the wall, and there was no way my manager could have done it. The building in 1917 was surrounded by caskets following the Halifax explosion. The building itself was also filled with bodies after that explosion. So what do you think? I think it's fairly obvious what's going on around Halifax, especially with the explosion. So many people, when their lives are abruptly ended out of nowhere, there's a lot of confusion, and this seems to lead to hauntings more times than not. Confused hauntings. Hauntings that have people still going about their daily lives, not sure why or what happened. Almost like a purgatory of sorts. And I think for several, their purgatory is around the grounds of Halifax where they once resided. Can't imagine one day you're sitting around going about your daily life, you hear a large explosion, and suddenly everything changes. If you've never seen the pictures of Halifax after that explosion, it is very reminiscent of the bombings in World War II in Japan. In fact, if you just did not know what you were looking at, you would think you were looking at the remnants of a nuclear explosion from Japan, because nothing is recognizable. Just charred land. Continuing on, this past summer of 07, something really strange happened to me. I went to bed at the same time as I usually do, which is probably 12 a.m. to 1 a.m., and I fell asleep. As I was asleep, I woke up to feeling very awkward. When I woke up, I noticed that there was a huge black circle over my bed. Being scared, I tried to get out of bed and run to my parents' room or something, but it felt like I was being held down. It's really hard to describe, but I didn't just feel as if it was a person holding me down. It felt as if it were a force of some kind. As I laid there scared shitless, because the only thing I could move were my eyes, I could move my feet a little bit, I looked around and saw that there was a weird black figure. It sort of looked like a person who would have a black coat on, but they were really blurry. Again, it's very hard to explain as I lay there looking around the room thinking I'm going to die. My dog was also in my room with me, lying on my bed, looking straight at me. And finally, she stood up and came up to my face and licked me. And that's when I sort of was able to snap out of it. I was able to move again. I then ran to my mother's room and woke her up and told her about it. I was 19 and I don't get scared very easily. The next day, after it took me a while to fall back asleep, I kept thinking to myself, I'm a really vivid dreamer. Maybe I was just dreaming, and maybe, coincidentally, everything in my room was in the exact same place and nothing was missing. So I started to think that it was just a dream. I didn't help much that my mom was saying it was just a dream also. A few months later, I ended up moving to Halifax into my apartment by myself. A couple weeks after I moved, and the same exact thing happened to me. Except this time there was no black circle. It was just a weird black blurry figure. Except this time there was more than just one. Probably a few of them. And one was right beside me on my bed. When I was finally able to snap out of it, I looked around my room and everything was the exact same as what it was when I was being held down by those forces. So that's when I decided that there was no way I could have had two dreams the exact same, and both of them having nothing missing out of my rooms or anything that was not in the right place. Like, for example, my guitar was in the exact same spot. A couple weeks ago, I was staying at a hotel in Toronto, Ontario, and the same thing happened to me there. I started to fall asleep, but then got woken up to a strange feeling of being held down, except this time, there was quite a bit of black, blurry figures all around me. A lot more than the first and second time. And this time, there still was no black circle above my bed on my ceiling, so I really don't know what was up with that the first time. I kept trying to move desperately and still couldn't. And also, I forgot to mention, while I'm being held down, I can't scream or talk at all. Seems like I was stripped of my voice and everything. But again, everything was also the same. I had a half-open laptop lying on the bed beside me. And everything in the room was the same, which I don't see how I could remember everything in my room if it was actually a dream, which I know for a fact it wasn't. Also, this other time that I was in a hotel, I was just lying in my bed watching a movie on my laptop. I had a spoon flat on my desk, and all of a sudden, it just fell off. I don't know if a ghost had anything to do with it. Also, there was no base from the movie I was watching, so there's no way that it could have caused the spoon to fall down. Yesterday, while I was at work, I was talking with one of my coworkers who's a flight attendant. She used to read tarot cards and has experienced ghost encounters herself. Also, her mother is a poem reader, and she's had a lot of visions, so there's some kind of psychic stuff that goes on with their family. I told her about what was happening to me, and she asked me if I had done anything to try to contact spirits before or anything like that. And I got thinking. I bought a Ouija board in the summer of 06, but I never tried to use it until the summer of 07 with some friends. We were able to talk to a spirit, but I always thought that it was just my friend pulling a joke on me, even though he swore it wasn't him. When I told her about that, she told me that I should get rid of the board ASAP. To me, it sounds like there is something following that individual, with the fact that the entities made themselves known in other cities as well. Now, if they're bad, I don't know. We've had many tales of shadow people, which is almost what that sounds like, mixed with sleep paralysis. But sometimes I could just see the undead attaching to someone out of confusion, almost like the living being a lifeboat or a life raft tossed out to sea, and they hang on, hoping that that living person is able to take them to some sort of safety. And I wonder if that's what's going on with that individual. We just heard the story of the Five Fishermen Restaurant, or a story from within those walls. Now here's some history on the Five Fishermen Restaurant. It's housed in a building that was originally constructed as a schoolhouse in 1817. Across the street is St. Paul's Anglican Church, the oldest building in Halifax, built in 1750, the year after Halifax was founded. The Five Fishermen Restaurant is housed in a building that was originally constructed, like I said, as that schoolhouse. By the early 1800s, Halifax was experiencing an exciting growth and development, and the need for a school was far too apparent. The good parishioners of St. Paul's Church in England took on that responsibility, and the school's doors opened in 1818. Its close proximity enabled the church to keep an eye on the developing minds of future students. High on the school's agenda was an emphasis on religious obligations and the education of the poor. It would become the first school in Canada to offer free education. It is for this reason that the building has the distinction of being the first national school and is a protected heritage site. Eventually, the building was unable to facilitate the growing needs of so many young minds, so Dalhousie College across the street took over that responsibility. The building then changed hands to its new proprietor. The new proprietor was to start up an art school. Thus, the Halifax Victorian School of Art was born. The new proprietor was a verbose and overbearing character, well known not just in Halifax, but also in other places of the world. Before coming to Halifax, she was a governess to the children of the King of Siam, an experience she would later write about a book called Anna and the King of Siam. The book would be translated into a Broadway musical, an Academy Award-winning movie, and many other versions of The King and I. Eventually, the art school moved to a new location and became the Nova Scotia College of Art and Design. Among the many distinguished artists on staff was the late Arthur Lismere of the Group of Seven fame. It wasn't long after Anna left the building that was taken over by the Snow family. Snow and Sons would enjoy a bustling business running a mortuary, John Snow and Company, funeral home would play a significant part in two of the world's greatest disasters. Titanic. Once the building was taken over by the Snow family, it became John Snow and Company Funeral Home. In April of 1912, when the great ship, the RMS Titanic, went down off the coast of Newfoundland, rescue operations took place out of the nearest mainland port. In this case, Halifax. Some of the wealthier victims, such as John Jacob Astor, the wealthiest man on the ship, and Charles M. Hayes, the president of Grand Trunk Railway, among others, were brought to Snow's funeral home so appropriate arrangements could be made. Another of the world's greatest catastrophes occurred on December 6th of 1917. The Halifax explosion claimed some 2,000 lives. Snow's funeral home, like every funeral home in the city, not to mention churches and schools, played its role in dealing with this tragedy. The local paper had run a picture on the anniversary of the explosion of the building with rows and rows of coffins lined up outside. The Argyle Street building enjoyed many other uses over the years, including a warehouse, but more recently, it been refurbished and restored in 1975 and opened its doors as a Five Fishermen, operating since that time as a fine seafood restaurant known for its great seafood, friendly, courteous staff, and its rich history. It's because of this history that the building, they say, exhibits some odd signatures, some albeit of a neither worldly sort. If you ask anyone who's worked there, you're sure to have a story or two. Many of the staff of the Five Fishermen restaurant are so used to odd occurrences that they wouldn't even bat an eye when a glass flies off a shelf with no one near, or cutlery on a table shifts, then falls to the floor by itself. There are many sinks in this building, and with so many sinks comes many taps. Taps that like to turn themselves on and off with no human assistance. One server related a story about being there late at night, and he was sure he was the only one left in the building. As he was checking the lights near the salad bar, he heard someone go through the swinging doors leading down into the kitchen. He turned quickly enough to see the doors swing shut, but on further inspection, he could find no other human presence. Another waitress tells of being there late at night. As she nears the grand stairwell that leads down to the maitre d' stand, she sees a gray apparition, a fog-like mass moving down the staircase. She chose not to linger. Many staff members can relate to the feeling of passing through cold air pockets on the warmest of nights, and the sensation of what feels like have a spirit move through you. Nor is it uncommon to hear voices, especially your name being whispered or even called out when there's no one else around. In the middle of one busy night, a server was using the credit card machine when he felt a tap on his shoulder. Trying to finish what he was doing before turning to respond, he felt a second tap. "What?" he said, and turned impatiently to find no one there. And behind the salad bar, the Five Fishermen has a private room, the captain's quarters, commonly referred to as the PR by the staff who work there. One night after all the customers had left, a waiter passed the PR and heard two people arguing. "The voices of a man and a woman," he says. When he went to investigate the commotion, the voices stopped, and the captain's quarters was empty. On another occasion, a server, the last in the building, was locking the doors and turning out the lights when she approached the PR and noticed someone enter it. Relieved that she had not locked the sole remaining customer into the building for the night, she entered the captain's quarters and checked it thoroughly, but found the room completely empty. How odd, considering that the entrance is also the only exit. One day in the middle of summer, on a sunny afternoon, it fell to this certain young fellow the task of setting up the salad bar. He'd arrive at 3 in the afternoon. The salad bar items were brought from the floor above on 4 large trays through the swinging doors. Around the bar to the salad bar area, on one of his passes, he heard a loud crash, but because his hands were full, he could do nothing about it. Upon returning for the next load, he decided to investigate the noise he had heard. When he looked around the corner of the salad bar, he found several pieces of an ashtray on the floor. He bent down to retrieve the pieces, and when he stood up, he was looking directly into a mirror
In the mirror, he could see the reflection of an old man walking away from him down the aisle. He was tall with long gray hair, and was wearing a long black coat that seemed to be from another time. Startled, for he was sure he was the only person in the restaurant, he turned to see who this could be, but there was no one there. When he turned back to the mirror, the image had disappeared. Thinking his eyes were playing tricks on him, the brave young fellow shrugged and returned to his duties. Several years later, the assistant manager was having a conversation with a customer on the phone at the station across from the salad bar. Again, it was 3 p.m, and he was the only one in the dining room. At one point, he saw an elderly man standing on the landing below. "Excuse me, sir. I'll be right with you." After he finished his conversation, he went to see how he could help this gentleman, but couldn't find him anywhere. He wasn't on the landing, and he wasn't in the foyer below. He checked the doors, and they were locked, so there was no way anyone could get in. Later on that evening, he described this odd experience to some of his fellow staff members, one of whom was the same young fellow who was setting up the salad bar several years before. Was he an older gentleman with long gray hair and was wearing a long black coat like an outdated greatcoat? Apparently, they had both encountered the same apparition. It was late one night as another server was resetting her section, looking forward to going home. Suddenly, she heard a loud tapping coming from behind her. When she looked around, she couldn't establish where it was coming from, so she returned to her work. Again, she heard the tapping. This time, she was surmised that it was coming from the window across the room. As the restaurant is high on the second floor, she found this to be very odd and slightly disconcerting. She went to investigate, and as she approached the window, she could see a misty gray shadow hovering outside the window. She hesitated, but eventually gained the courage to continue. By the time she reached the glass pane, the image was gone. Most of these occurrences seem to happen before the restaurant opens or after it closes. There are a few people about, but not always. The final story took place in the middle of a busy night. A hostess was in the process of showing a young couple to their table when she stopped at the salad bar to explain its offerings. Suddenly, she felt a harsh brush against the side of her face. When she glanced around, she could detect no cause for it. She finished sitting the couple, and upon returning to the hostess stand, the maitre d' asked, "What happened to your face?" There was a red handprint on her cheek as if she had been slapped. If you ask her, it was nothing so violent. In fact, the antics that have occurred at the Five Fishermen restaurant seem to be just that, mischievous, maybe unable to ignore, but in the end, harmless. What do you think is going on at the Five Fishermen restaurant? And who or what is haunting it?
Personally,
I'm going to have to go and say it's probably multiple entities. Multiple confused entities. Or entities that are comfortable now with where their final resting place is. And are having a little bit of fun at the expense of the individuals visiting the salad bar. It's interesting that the salad bar takes such a prominent place in so many of the stories. Maybe it's just the location of it with that backed-off room that's not necessarily always accessible. Either that or they just want some croutons. Very interesting story. That's a restaurant I wish I would have known about to visit when we were there about 5 years ago. That would have been very exciting to go and see. Another story from Halifax on today's episode. It's called St. Paul's Head. It's a favorite story, and the most obvious to anyone walking down Argyle Street. It's based upon the silhouette of a man's head in the window of St. Paul's Church, the oldest Protestant church in Canada. Now, several times since the explosion, the windows have been changed in an attempt to banish the shadowy reminder, but every time it reappears as if the old building refuses to allow the city to forget it. The different stories attached to the silhouette. The most popular story, which is told in a local walking ghost tour, is the tale of a young organist practicing at the church at the time of the explosion. The young man's head was severed from his body by way of the explosion, concussion, or a shard of glass and blasted through the window. Another story states that the head is of one of the hapless sailors from Ground Zero, and yet a further tale says the silhouette bears a remarkable likeness to the Reverend Jean-Baptiste Moreau, who served as an assistant to the church between 1750 and 1753. Whoever the head is modeled after, the sight is sure to grab the attention of anyone walking down Argyle Street for the first time. The Haligonians, however, have accepted the mysterious silhouette as part of their beloved city. I would love to see that. All these things that you find out about after you visit a city. That seems to be how it always works. It's so often where we go and visit a place, and now where we obviously look into it a lot more than we used to, as far as where the hauntings are and what is out there. But more often than not, though, you come home and hear these stories and like, oh, I really wish I would have seen that. How creepy would it be to constantly see that and know that that just keeps returning? And why does it keep returning? As one walks further into the city, up South Street, a large hospital complex commandeers several blocks of the city where a little-known tale originates from the oldest part of the area. It's a complex on Tower Road, the Victoria General. The hospital had a tentative beginning, but by 1867, the doors remained open to heal and care. But in the halls of the hospital, wanderers see a gray nun, an apparition observed by many nurses through the years. She's thought to be a victim of the Halifax explosion, who came to work at the hospital during World War I. Since her untimely death, she's said to comfort and guide the dying during their final minutes. While administering to her charge, a soft gray light and faint smell of incense accompanies her. If you ever find yourself wandering the streets of Halifax, be sure to walk past the old Victorian hospital and imagine the gray nun making her rounds as well. On your way up from the waterfront, take a good look at the silhouette in St. Paul's window and cross the street to then experience five fishermen. In addition to the above ground areas of Halifax, Halifax also has an underground that is also populated with the undead. It's been building upwards since it was founded in 1749. Its newer and shinier buildings replace older wood and stone structures. As another story beneath the streets and sidewalks, it's remained unchanged since long-forgotten laborers constructed it. Halifax Underground is a documentary that discusses the underground world of Halifax. Takes a look at the mythology and the reality of a secret world underneath the city's pavement and landmarks, and examines stories of secret tunnels extending from Fort George to Citadel Hall to the waterfront, or even out under the harbor to George's Island. The stories have been passed down through generations, and like many urban myths, there's an element of truth to them. One of the filmmakers says many of us have never taken the extra step to find out what really lies beneath their feet. When we travel abroad, we often take a tour and explore a museum or whatever, but we rarely do that at home. I'm learning things through my kids because we take them to museums and places like that, so I'm learning new things through their eyes because I'm doing things with them I wouldn't have done on my own. How many people in Halifax have gone on a city tour, whether it's the Harbor Hopper or something else? Or the Halifax Underground Tour, it guides people to Citadel Hill and Hal Thompson, an archaeologist, Laura de Boer and George Island expert, retired archaeologist Earl Luffman, examine the historical record, take people through some of these sites that are a gateway to the lower depths. These tunnels sparked Simpson's interest a few years back, when one was uncovered beneath the Halifax Club. Research for the show led to a similar story of man-made passageways discovered when a portion of George Street caved in 40 years ago. Stories like these had fueled the belief that there's a network of tunnels stretching throughout the downtown core and beyond. To find out more, the Halifax Underground production team had to literally start at the top and work their way down. I knew there'd be a historical mystery that needed to be explored, so we began at Citadel Hill. We knew that the stories generally reference a tunnel system that connected military facilities throughout the city, so it made sense to start with that history. At the same time, making the TV documentary, I was quite keen on trying to find something new and physically uncover some evidence that hadn't been discovered before. The process began with asking owners and managers of historic downtown properties to see if there were any promising portals in their basements. Simpson and his crew spent hours on the phone cold calling businesses as well as seeking help from civic workers, literally looking under every rock that you can. Eventually, they were able to be accompanied by DeBoer into the basement of the Blue Nose 2 restaurant at the corner of Duke and Hollis Streets to examine a bricked-up underground archway, the kind of structural element that's becoming increasingly rare in the city. As we develop and modernize above ground, we're also losing some of the heritage that's underground. When a building gets taken down, there goes its foundation and basement too. It was in the Roy Building basement before it was torn down, and it seemed quite dark and mysterious, but now that's gone. Any possibility of finding a passageway or an entrance to a tunnel that may have been there is gone. On Citadel Hill, Thompson shows the tea galleries, which extend underneath the slopes around the fort that were meant to be filled with gunpowder and ignited under the boots of an advancing enemy force. That's as close as they've come to discovering the legendary tunnels to the harbor or George's Island. It wasn't that the technology didn't exist at the time. As Hal points out, there were mines in Cape Breton that went out well underneath the ocean, going down fairly deep. They could do it, but to do it superstitiously, without any evidence of their construction and any quite significant evidence, is another story. It's not exactly the kind of thing you could do under the cover of darkness. For Simpson, the whole project was a learning experience, from finding out that Fort George is actually the fourth defense structure to sit atop Citadel Hill, to getting a guided VIP tour of the island's fortifications from Bluffman and venturing into the spaces usually forbidden to the public. After the final credits roll, sense of mystery isn't completely dispersed, and there's still hope there's more to be discovered beneath the pavement and old cobblestones, even during the process of modernization. When the public works crews are working around this sort of stuff, it's an obstacle for them, says Simpson. They've got a job to do. They're putting in a new sewer pipe or an electrical line, and unfortunately, preserving a heritage landmark isn't what they're there to do. The conventional wisdom is that we've lost access to a lot of tunnels that existed down underneath downtown because of modernization, but an exhaustive study of the underground area has not been done, so there's always a possibility of discovering access points that haven't yet been found. That'd be quite an adventure, seeking out hidden tunnels throughout a city. I bet there's more to be found. In my hometown in Wisconsin, in the 1990s, they were finding hidden tunnels, part of the Underground Railway. The very first radio station that I worked at had part of the tunnel in its basement, much like described in that story of the arched-off entryway and exit point that was then bricked off. Those existed in the building that I worked in. And then when they were doing road construction, they were finding tunnels underneath roadways. They were finding underneath football fields where the high school was, and parts of the city having mysterious sinkholes that were simply the tunnels beginning to cave in upon themselves. I think there's a lot of underground passageways, not only in Halifax, but across North America, that have yet to be found, that were simply forgotten with time. The question is, once you get in to those tunnels, what are you going to find? Albeit probably nothing living. What about the non-living? Very interesting stories today. Thank you for joining me on a special edition of Real Ghost Stories Online as we were able to explore just some of the haunting stories of Halifax. If you like our show, please consider supporting it, becoming an EPP, an extra podcast person. You can sign up to do that on our website at realghoststoriesonline.com. You get access to all of our bonus episodes, as well as the satisfaction of knowing you're keeping our show on the air and a brand new bonus episode every single week. You can check it out at realghoststoriesonline.com. Click Become an EPP and keep this thing going. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.